Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Overtime on The Fan, 1 hour from now. Steven Wino and I had a phenomenal conversation that we recorded before the show on this whole Tom Wilson thing with the Capitals and what it means for the NHL, some self-examination that should or shouldn't happen. That conversation at the top of the next hour. This hour starts with the one and only Howard Beck, senior writer at Sports Illustrated on the NBA. Formerly Bleacher Report, amongst other things, the New York Times, covered this league a long time. And Howard, it is great to have you back on the show, my friend. It is good to talk to you. How you been?
Been great, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing really well. And I'm excited to talk to you and wanted you specifically of all the people. You like to joke about how old you are. You are not an old man. You started when you were like three covering the NBA.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. So you've seen a lot of NBA basketball over the years and been front row for some of the great runs by some of the great players in this league. And what Russell Westbrook has done over the last really month is taken this triple-double, you know, his triple-double run. Like, he's had them before. He's averaged them for multiple seasons now. But it feels like this level is even new, where it's not barely skating by with 10-10-10 or 10-11-10. Like, these are 14, 18 assist, rebound kind of nights. What kind of, like, how do you try to contextualize what Westbrook is doing? Who, by the way, is probably going to be, have notched another triple-double by the end of this phone call.
By the time I finished my next sentence, for all we know.
He's got 9, 10, and 9 right now, so I'm not actually joking.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So it's insane. Every time he does it, the sheer number of times he's done it, the averaging it for a season multiple times, all of it. We can debate all the other things about, you know, does it contribute to winning? Is Westbrook's the totality of his game impactful enough on its own? What does it do to teammates if one guy has that much control of the offense? Like, those are all discussions that you can have philosophically and as a practical matter, but as simply an athletic feat, as a sign of just individual greatness and talent, and also, of course, just hustle, because the rebound part of it, especially as a guard, is just, it's unheard of. There's nothing you can do but be impressed and stand in awe of it. As I say, there's a separate piece to debate about the contributions to winning and how his teams have done, especially how his teams have done since he's not been Kevin Durant's teammate in three different places. But the feat itself, over and over and over again, is absolutely remarkable.
And see, that's the thing that kind of impresses me, because I'm not a huge, been a huge Westbrook fan. But watching him up close, like I have when he's been with the Wizards, and specifically over the last month, has, I want to say, changed my perspective, but I will try not to like put it in a larger context of his career. The last month, him doing it has contributed to winning. And to me, that's what's so impressive about this particular run. The numbers have been particularly insane with, again, these 14 assists, 18 rebound kind of nights. but it's also been a lot of like 10 to 18 points where he has distributed. And to me, that's what's been so impressive about this run is that he has found a way to contribute it to winning. And I don't know how much you're a national NBA writer. I'm assuming you watch the Wizards every once in a while, and certainly when someone is doing something like this. But like, does this kind of basketball from Russell Westbrook look different than those other iterations, which were impressive in the feat themselves, where this one seems to be contributing to winning more?
But he's always contributed to winning in stretches, right? Like, he had a couple months last year with Houston where he was just absolutely on fire, and it was contributing to winning. And certainly his first year without Durant in Oklahoma, the year that he won MVP, it didn't contribute to winning at the highest level. I think that team won 46 games, but it was an achievement in itself because there wasn't, you know, a lot of other talent there, certainly not all-star level talent. So this is not the first time that he has channeled those triple doubles and all the gaudy stats into winning. It's happened. It just doesn't happen enough over the course of a full season. And this year is not one to judge because of COVID, because of everything that the Wizards went through as a team and that he went through himself health-wise. So, you know, I don't know that there's anything specifically different about this spurt from him. We've seen various versions of it. I think why it looks so much more dramatic is that the Wizards were done. They were cooked. And he and Beal together have pulled this thing back from the brink and have got this team firmly in the play-in range and, you know, still potentially climbing a bit within that too. I mean, you know, they're probably not getting to that 7-8 range, but they certainly can overtake Indiana for ninth, in which case they would at least host that play-in game.
Howard Beck, Sports Illustrated, with us on The Fan. That in itself is worth talking about, though, because if you look at the Wizards earlier in the year, they went through all this stuff, but also I think a lot of us were like, we didn't think they'd be that good, and now they're not that good, so look at us. We're so smart. We're right. And now it's like, well, I don't know. Next year, could they be good? How do you feel about the future of the Wizards differently than you did, say, 2 months ago, considering what they've done over the last 2 months?
I remain a skeptic. I have been for a while. Westbrook is up there in years and mileage, and yes, he's producing at a high level now, and has for the last couple of months, but can he do it for a full 82 game season when we get back to 82 game seasons? This is a age range when, especially guards who rely a lot on their explosiveness and athleticism, start to lose it and start to become less effective. And we were already seeing that from him over the last couple of years, that his efficiency was declining and his free throw rate was declining. His free throw rate has been down. I mean, his MVP year, and granted, this was an outlier in some respects, but his MVP year, he averaged 10.4 free throw attempts a game. It went down to 7 the year after that, and it's been 6 point something every year since, and it's 6.2 this year. So he's not as successful at getting in and drawing contact. His free throw percentage is terrible. He's shooting 64% this year. But it's down even from last year. So he's, you know, and his shooting has always been problematic. And so if he can't beat guys off the dribble as consistently as he ages, and he's not a shooter, that's an issue. So the question for the Wizards is, between Westbrook at this age, definitely, and I may not be a rapid decline, but in decline based on his age and mileage, Bradley Beal firmly in his prime, is there enough around them? You know, a healthy Thomas Bryant, Rui Hachimura, you know, developing Denny Avdija, you know, Gafford's been a great find. Like, is there enough there that this team can take some big leap in an Eastern Conference that's been improving? I don't know. I don't quite see it. Like, there's still at least one big move away. And you know, Westbrook and Beal are not on the same timeline. So right. I'm not that optimistic about where the Wizards are with respect to, you know, the next couple seasons.
Right. They're going to be firmly mediocre because they also don't have the ammo to make that move, which, you know, thanks for everything, Ernie. And I think sometimes people forget that is how bad a shape this team is in because of some of the moves that were made.
They also gave up a pick, didn't they, in that Westbrook Wall swap?
Yeah.
So, there, you know, there's not a lot to work with if you're going to try to make a big move. You know, I've been kind of, I don't say waiting for this to happen because it's not like I want it to happen. I just kind of feel like it's inevitable that Bradley Beal will ask out. And he has been the loyal soldier saying that, that he has no desire to go anywhere else. He wants to finish his career there. He wants to, you know, he wants to win there, but you know, everybody's patience runs out eventually. And is this the off season where, you know, that finally happens? I don't know. Some people around the league expect that, but people around the league have been expecting that for a while now, and it hasn't happened. It wouldn't surprise me, and it might actually be the best thing for all parties, because you could get a pretty nice ransom, I think, back for him, which would help you, you know, kind of reshape this franchise for the future.
No doubt about it. Howard Beck, Bleacher, or sorry, used to be Bleacher Report, now works for Sports Illustrated, with us here on The Fan. Old habits die hard, man. I had you on so many times. But
all good.
The business card has been updated, which is now a Twitter bio. This year is obviously one of the most unpredictable years ever in the NBA in terms of trying to figure out what's going to happen moving forward because of the nature of the season, and we don't need to rehash all those reasons why. But it has been fascinating to watch it come together because I feel like with the NBA, every year there's always a sense of inevitability. The LeBron James team is going to wind up in it near the end. Over the last 20 years, it feels like Brooklyn's just going to win the East because teams like that win. But we have with LeBron's team, he hadn't played anytime soon, tried to come back the other night. It didn't really work. Ankles hurt, out another couple of games. And then you have all these other teams that are either unproven, newly together in Phoenix, or obviously Denver's now a gigantic mystery because Jamal Murray gets hurt. Meanwhile, in the East, Philly is, they're the one seed. Milwaukee, they just beat Brooklyn the other night. And so maybe, and of course, Brooklyn hasn't been healthy all year. So do you feel like there's anything that you look at now on whatever today is, May 6th, that you're like, yeah, I feel pretty good about that? Or is it actually as uneasy as it seems based off of all of those factors that I just said above?
I think for better or worse, and since I'm generally in favor of suspense, I think probably better. I have no idea what's going to happen in the playoffs. Like, just none. You know, LeBron is out again right now. Anthony Davis hasn't looked that great since he's returned. Once they're both back and healthy, you still, you know, they haven't spent much time with Andre Drummond, who's their new starting center. And like, I think that matters. I think you got to get a feel for each other. And you know, they're the defending champs. They're the team that we would by default say should be the favorites to win the championship. And they just, they're in rough shape right now. And they don't have Dennis Schroeder either at the moment. You know, Utah and Phoenix are atop the standings in the West, but we've never seen them in this position before. Phoenix especially making the jump from 10th to potentially top record in the West right now, number two. Utah, you know, firm middle of the pack team for a few years and now suddenly is at the top. They don't have the star power that we usually see in a champion, so it's hard to assess them. Denver, if they had Jamal Murray, would probably be the favorite right now by default, or these co-favorites with the Clippers maybe. The Clippers flamed out in the bubble last year, so we have a hard time buying them. You know, like, it's just everybody's got all these caveats and asterisks by them. And in the East, you know, Brooklyn's got all the talent, but those guys have played seven games and I think a total of 168 minutes or something together. It's I don't know that you can just microwave a championship that way. And, you know, and Harden still has to get healthy. So they're hard to figure. The Bucks and the Sixers have continuity on their side. Although the Bucks obviously have a couple new pretty significant pieces this season in Jrue Holiday and PJ Tucker. But, you know, those teams, more stability, more continuity, less firepower than the Nets do. So, you know, there's 100 different ways this could all come out, and I'm not willing to bet on any of them. When fortunately I don't bet. So,
well, it's funny you say that because now you've ruined the premise of my question. But I'm going to make you not bet your own money. I'm going to give you $100 and say, and let's forget the odds and what Vegas has the favorites at and all that kind of stuff. But just like, you get $100, it doubles if you pick the right one. If not, your $100 is gone. You have to bet it because I'm giving you this $100 to do it. Who are you putting your $100 on?
For the finals or
to win it all? To win it all.
Oh.
It's not your money. It's fine, Howard.
I know. No, it's just a tough question.
Yeah.
I think if I had to pick the finals right now, I might go Clippers-Bucks. And then who's emerging from that, maybe I lean Clippers slightly. But my gut right now, if I had to pick two teams, Clippers, Bucks. But that's I have no confidence in that. It really is just a toss up right now all the way through. And like I say, like it's bad because the injuries have a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
You would rather the suspense be because everybody's just really evenly matched or whatever else. And also, as far as I'm concerned, it's no fun if LeBron is hobbling through the playoffs. So you don't have to be a Laker fan or a LeBron fan. The guy's just an incredible athlete and an incredible player. And I want to see the best players playing at their best, period. But the good news is this is wide open, and maybe as wide open as we've seen.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way as long as it's been in a long, long time. Howard Beck, senior writer, Sports Illustrated. Follow him on Twitter, at Howard Beck. It was great to talk, sir. Let's do it again at some point down the road near the playoffs or early in them. And I'm glad that I'm back on the radio so I can talk to you about basketball, man.
Appreciate it, Craig. Thanks, man. Good talking to you.
Howard Beck, senior writer for Bleacher Report or for Sports Illustrated. I have said for the previous 5 years that I was on the radio here, Bleacher Report. He did an amazing job there. Got to do some really cool stuff. He's back with Sports Illustrated, where he's still writing incredible stuff, and his perspective is one that I value. I just can't apparently get where he works correct, so that's good. I'd love to do the same thing that I just did to Howard next. $100. I'm going to give it to you. Who you putting it on to win the NBA title, plus another thought on Westbrook to follow up on something Howard said. That's next. Craig Hoffman with you on The Fan. Thanks to Howard Beck, senior writer at Sports Illustrated, for joining us here on The Fan. I didn't update at the end of that conversation whether Westbrook had the triple-double yet. And the latest is he, of all things, is short on points. 9 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists for Westbrook in a 4-point game with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Beal, hot start, gone cold. 14 points, 5 assists, 3 boards for Beal. Meanwhile, Pascal Siakam having a night for Toronto / Tampa. He's got 26, 8, and 4. Also a big night for Gary Trent Jr. He's got 17. Again, 4-point game with about 10.5 to go in the fourth quarter. Wizards trying to stay ahead of Toronto in the standings. They are right now 10-11, I do believe. Yeah, 10-11 as the Wizards are just a half game behind the Pacers for the 9 spot. Raptors, they got serious work to do. They are 3 games behind the Wizards for the 10 spot, which is significant. Because that's where the play-in game is. LeBron's favorite, the play-in game. Top 10 seeds make the quote-unquote playoffs. 10 plays 7, 8 plays 9. Those winners go into the regular 8 and 7 spots against the 1 and 2 seeds. So I close with Howard talking about, if I give you $100 and say, you get to keep it if you get to pick a winner. Not, you got to give it back to me. It's not exactly what I said. I think I made it more complicated for Howard. That's how we're going to make it for this hypothetical. $100, you pick the winner, you get to keep it. If not, I get my money back. I would still pick the Brooklyn Nets. Why? Because if they get healthy, they are still the best team. And even if they are not healthy, they might still be the best team. I thought it was really interesting. Chris Miles joined us 2 weeks ago. Because last week was the NFL drafts. 2 weeks ago. And he said, as long as Harden's healthy, they win the title. Like, if Harden's healthy, if they have 2 of the 3 and Harden's one of them, they win the title. Because Harden makes the other 2 way better. Durant and Irving might get in each other's way a little bit. Harden solves some of their problems. By the way, right now, the Nets are down to the Mavericks with, by the way, no Harden, Durant, and Irving. Irving's got 30 as we're closing in on the end of the third quarter. Durant's got 16 on 14 shots. By the way, for Dallas, Luka's got 26-5 with 3 steals. So, if Harden's healthy, you feel like they've definitely got the upper hand. But even if they just have Durant, like, last time Kevin Durant was healthy, he beat LeBron in the finals. He had help, but he was the best player on the floor. He was better than what LeBron was in that last NBA Finals Warriors-Cavs a couple years ago. Dude's that good. So while I hear Milwaukee, and I really like what they do, because here's the thing about Milwaukee. They're going to defend like crazy. They're going to be absolutely horrifying to play against because they got two Defensive Player of the Year candidates in Holiday and Antetokounmpo. Giannis has won it. It's a preposterous that Jrue Holiday hasn't. Brook Lopez is a good defender, and he shoots threes, and he's 7 feet tall. They got some other playmakers. Like, Chris Middleton's a pretty good defender. So, like, they got four starters who are really above-average defenders, two great defenders, and that travels. On nights when you don't hit shots, if you can just be good defensively, you give yourself a chance. And that prevents you from getting blown out in a game. Now, they have had trouble in the past couple of years, and Mike Budenholzer had this a little bit in Atlanta, where he is a little inflexible in the playoffs, and that can come back to bite you, because at the end of the day, the playoffs are about adjustments. And the team that makes the adjustment that the other one can't adjust to is how you're going to win. And so I would honestly pick Philly with Doc and that staff and what they've got in Philly, bunch of dudes who can shoot, Embiid, Simmons, who's, again, Defensive Player of the Year candidate. They defend like crazy. I'd pick them over Milwaukee. But still, I just think at the end of the day, Brooklyn is the team to beat, even if they aren't entirely whole. I'm less concerned about them gelling as I am them actually physically being healthy. If they're healthy, they could show up with not a second played together before that, and they're the favorite. That's how good I think they are, talent-wise. Because they also got Blake. They also got Joe Harris. Like, they have depth as well as three of the best 13 players on the planet, or whatever number you think Kyrie is. In the West, it feels like the Clippers are going to come out and we're all going to be like, yeah, of course they did. Because Kawhi's incredible. Paul George, he's had his playoff struggles, but like, he's still really good. And they got a bunch of other dudes who can play. And they're healthy. So that one's almost easier for me. It kind of feels like, who's the obvious team that we're missing? We're going to look back and be like, oh yeah, duh, the Clippers. Of course, it could wind up being, if AD straightens it out and LeBron is healthy, of course the Lakers are right there. But do I trust Denver without Murray? Not necessarily, although I think they could come out because Michael Porter Jr. is really good. Just all of a sudden, he's like, oh, Jamal Murray's gone. I'll score 28 a game. Cool. Phoenix just doesn't have any playoff experience outside of Chris Paul. Hard time trusting them. Utah, they're the one seed. They could be the right answer, too. So don't sleep on the one seed. Seems like an obvious thing. But I also look at, like, point differential is a really good measure of how a team's going to succeed. Utah is almost in double digits point differential. Double digit teams go to the finals. Like almost always. They're at 9-5. Ran long with Howard. Ran long on those thoughts. So let's come back with the Westbrook thought. Maybe we'll get to a call by the end of the hour and head back to the Rodgers topic. And then at 10 o'clock, Steve Wino on the Tom Wilson really fiasco for the NHL. It didn't have to be one, but they made it one because that's what sports leagues do. Talking about it with Wino at 10. Craig Hoppen with you until 11 on Overtime on the Fan. We got a ball game down in Tampa. 97-96 Wizards just took the lead on a Davis Bertans 3. 5:30 to go in this one. Big night from Pascal Siakam for Toronto. Russell Westbrook, surprise, surprise, nearly has a triple-double. He's got 9 points, 13 assists, 12 boards. Beal has been stuck on 14 for a while. Raul Neto, though, picking up the slack. He's got 21 tonight. He's been playing great as of late. Bertans also had a good night. 3 of 7 from 3. He's gotten to the free throw line 5 times, made them all. He's got 14. Keep you updated as we keep going on this one. Russell Westbrook, though, over the last 17 games leading into tonight, The Wizards in those games are 13-4. Westbrook is averaging nearly 38 minutes a game. 22 points, 13.5 rebounds, 13.5 assists, 1.6 steals. He is averaging 4.5 turnovers at a game. Plus minus on average, plus 6.5. 47% shooting, 32% from three, 71% free throw. What's been amazing about this last stretch, where these are Russell Westbrook's assist numbers. This is starting the win against Orlando literally a month ago, May or April 7th, right? Today's the 6th. This encompasses every game in the last month. Here's his assist numbers. 15, 14, 14, 14, 11, 9, 11, 17, 10, 11, 11, 14, 14, 11, 9, 24, 17. Rebound numbers. 14, 14, 11, 14, 15, 15, 14, 11, 20, 11, 5, 13, 18, 12, 10, 21, 12. And, of course, the game against Indiana the other night, the Wizards won that one by 13. It was, do I have a score here? No, that's fine. It was like 150 to 138 or whatever it was, where Westbrook goes for 14 points, 24 assists, 21 rebounds. Is an all-time stat line that happens, and it was kind of the perfect game to try to explain Westbrook at his best. The reason he puts up those numbers are because each team had over 100 possessions, something that doesn't really happen that often in the NBA. Typically, teams get it in the 90s, but 100... Getting that high in a 48-minute game, that's like, I mean, do the math. That's each team getting two possessions, two-plus possessions per minute. So the pace of that game is one of the fastest the NBA's seen. I think it was like the second fastest since they started keeping pace statistics or something like that. Like, I don't remember the exact number I saw, but it was... It's one of the fastest games up and down that you've ever seen. And obviously more possessions leads to more shots, which is more chances for assists. And obviously more missed shots is more chances for rebounds. So Westbrook puts up 14, 24, and 21. And it's really easy to go like, well, the pace was out of control, so that's why the numbers were crazy. But you want to know who pushes the pace? It's Westbrook. He's the reason the game is that fast. And for a Wizards team that is not very good defensively, as they give up a corner three right on cue. Now down two with 4:22 to go as Scott Brooks takes time out. Playing fast is the way they're going to win. Let Beal get going in transition. Let Westbrook go in transition. And yeah, they're both going to turn the ball over a little bit. Yeah, you're not always going to get a shot, but you're going to get more. And they're comfortable playing that pace. And the thing about Westbrook is, he's playing 38 minutes a game. And I understand that, and I am certainly someone who believes in, when we're comparing players, we should use things like per 100 possessions and per 36 minutes, because it does even out the playing field in terms of efficiency, and it allows us to compare how effective players are being outside of a straight up just, this is, you know, this guy's playing a ton of minutes and is accumulating stats. Westbrook stays at pretty much the same level for all 38, nearly 40 minutes. And his availability is a skill. Like, availability is an ability. And Westbrook's ability, especially as he's gotten healthy through this year, to eat up minutes is something that is worth praise. And so, am I saying that Westbrook should be in the MVP conversation or something like that? No. Does he deserve all NBA? No, because his early season wasn't that good. And guys like Chris Paul are having incredible years. There's just too many good guards. There's too many good players in this league. But with some of the injuries, you know, maybe he winds up getting a couple of votes. Beal is a 30-point-per-game scorer, certainly is going to get some votes and probably deserves to be, you know, I don't know if he's first team, but certainly, I mean, I think Curry and Paul probably take your first team spots as Chris Paul's got Phoenix second in the West and Steph Curry's now leading the NBA in scoring and is averaging 37 a game the last month, is carrying the Warriors to a play-in spot. But Beal is going to make All-NBA, and deservedly so. But let's not pretend like the last month of Russell Westbrook is just some statistical accumulation phenomenon. The reason he is able to accumulate the stats, the driving force behind the higher pace that the Wizards are playing, the driving force behind them going 13-4 in the last 17, 13-4 in the last month, with a chance to win again tonight, is that Russell Westbrook has, after a season, or in less than a season now, figured out a way to play that is a way in which the Wizards can be competitive night in and night out. Do I agree with Howard Beck that long-term, I don't know that this is sustainable? Yeah. Do I love their chances in the playoffs? Not particularly. Do they need another piece? Hell yeah. But, that doesn't make the last month any less impressive. It doesn't mean that if you are choosing to go to Capital One to go to games that you shouldn't cheer for Russell Westbrook. It doesn't mean now, with the benefit of hindsight, that Russell Westbrook was clearly the better player in the John Wall trade. That John hadn't been that great in Houston. Who knows what he would have been here? It's impossible to know. But this version of Russell Westbrook is, one, it's really fun to watch. Two, it's a productive player. And three, you just hope that he can stick around a while. Because as Howard said, he's done this before. But I think to try to, one, normalize Russ's stats as if other players could just go out and do it is a disservice to him. And two, to put them up is some kind of accumulation without realizing he's the reason he's able to accumulate them, because he's a driving force in how this game is played, is also not giving him nearly enough credit. Craig Hoffman with you here on 106.7 The Fan. We might have a final score for you after this break. Raul Neto turnover there turns into Toronto fast break. 106-101 now with 3:20 to go as Washington is having one slip away. So we might have a final score. If not, we'll have the final seconds for you. Wrap up the hour before we talk to Steve Wino about the Tom Wilson incident coming up at 10 o'clock. Craig Hoffman with you. 800-636-1067. You want to get in on any of this on The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you. This is Overtime on 106.7 The Fan. The Wizards, 2:56 to go, coming out of the under three timeout, down five, currently in a review. And they retain possession. So Wizards have 2 seconds left on the shot clock to see if they can make this a one possession game, potentially with a three. Actually, I guess they can do that with a two. And they do. They get a layup from Bradley Beal off a great cut. Good find from Russell Westbrook. So 3-point game, 2:53 to go. We'll keep you updated as we go. Been talking Wizards this hour. Continue to do so on the phones. 800-636-1067. Let's go to Jake in Fredericksburg. Jake, thanks for calling. You're on The Fan.
Hey, good evening. Craig. How are you?
Good, man.
Hey, so I just got a quick question to me and a friend were talking about what Russell is doing now. Obviously, I mean, it's impressive. Anytime a triple-double, as many as he gets. But based on the style of play, do you think it's easier what he's doing now as opposed to what Elgin Baylor was doing when he got all of his, just because of how, you know, tough the NBA was back then? Or is each guy just kind of equal in what they do?
You mean Oscar Robertson? Oscar Robertson instead of Elgin Baylor? He's gone. So, Oscar was the guy who got the triple doubles. And Westbrook now, by the way, is one behind Oscar. He just notched, getting into double digits on the night, on the points column. So he's now got 180 career triple doubles. Oscar, the big O, has 101. They're very different games. Obviously, the geometry of the game has completely changed. Now with a 3-point shot, which literally was not around for most of Oscar Robertson's career, if not all of Oscar Robertson's career. The geometry of the game, there's these great still shots. I'm trying to think of who has been doing it. It's Mike Prada, who used to write or writes for SB Nation, I think, still. He might be doing the Substack thing now, but longtime NBA writer who is terrific and is actually writing a book on the X's and O's of the NBA, where it's like same score, same time of game, completely different picture. And you see these games from the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, where players are just jammed on one side of the floor versus now, not only are they spread out side to side, but you got guys standing 28 feet from the hoop that have to be guarded. So it's just a completely different game. So it's hard to say, like, is what Westbrook is doing versus what Oscar was doing is it harder when, and some level the answer is no, it's equally as difficult because no one else is doing it, right? It's not like when Oscar was doing it, there's some other guy who has 160 triple-doubles. And it's not like Westbrook now has company. Like, LeBron has been close a ton and probably could, frankly, if he wanted to. But, like, LeBron's averaged, you know, like 28, 8, and 8 his whole career. But that's different than, you know, our and it also is a little bit silly because our obsession with, like, on the tens with 0 or 5-based numbers in other sports is a little, like, I don't know, biased, I guess, towards, like, simplicity. Like, is it really that much more impressive averaging 10 assists? Like, 10.0 versus 9.9? It feels that way because that's how we've been conditioned, but, like, that is what it is. So, I don't know. It's a good question in terms of, like, is it harder now? I will say the pace of games has sped up again over the last couple of years versus where it was, you know, and that's the crazy thing. You, like, look back at, and it's, I've now started three sentences, not finished any of them, but collecting the thoughts. So many people now that harken back to the quote-unquote olden days of basketball are talking about the 90s when the pace in the league slowed tremendously and you had playoff games in occasionally the 70s, which were gross, but the 80s, 90s, like a 90 to 88 basketball game was a regular thing, which is why the NBA eventually changed the rules to be like, this is ridiculous. We need to open this up because guys were just getting hammered. It was ugly. It was a bunch of post-ups. And dudes were just like back it in and throw up garbage hook shots and miss and, you know, fights for rebounds. And it was just bad basketball. I know people love the 90s basketball, or they claim to have loved the 90s basketball, but like basketball now is so much more beautiful than it was then. Especially certain teams, like the way the Warriors play, even now, the way the ball moves, it's reminiscent of the 80s on some level. Some of the teams that played, you know, obviously the Showtime Lakers, but even, you know, the Celtics teams with Bird, like Bird was an incredible passer. And the way the ball moved and the way the skill with Bird, McHale, they had Bill Walton the 1 year in 86. Like those guys moved it, unlike the 90s, which was like, and the early 2000s, especially like post Jordan, was real bad for a lot of ISO. Just like now you get pick and roll, teams double. The ball gets thrown to the big swings it, like the ball moves. It just didn't happen in a lot of the isolation heavy stuff that you used to see. Even guys like Harden playing the pick and roll now. Yes, there is some ISO, but the way defenses are designed, it's just a prettier brand of basketball. So what you would have though, pre 3-point shot, is still these 130 to 120 games in the 70s and 80s. So the pace was that a guy like Oscar, who was similar to Russell in that he was a bigger athletic point guard who, I mean, Oscar was more of a post-up guy, even though he was a guard. They could put up these kind of numbers. And so, yeah, it's a good question. But I also like the league has so much more talent now that I would say it from that standpoint, it is harder because the dudes that Oscar was playing against versus the caliber of player that Russell is going against are not the same. There were great players, obviously, then, and great teams, but there are more great players now, especially the point guard position, that it's really hard to say that, like, it was, you know, a guy like Oscar was going against someone anywhere close to his caliber on most nights that he suited up. Ryan, we got another call here, or all right. We then are going to go to break and come back, and we're going to play a really great conversation with Steve Wino, AP's national hockey writer, who I talked to before the show. We taped it because we didn't know exactly when the Nats were going to finish. Turned out we started the show right on time. What a time. But I can tell you, because we taped it, a really insightful, fascinating conversation about this whole Tom Wilson saga, and then I'll share some thoughts in the back end. So that's how we're going to spend the 10 o'clock hour with Wino first, and then me and you on the phones at 800-636-1067. Craig Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.